So I am sitting with Jeremy of Gems Beer in Modi'in. Gems is one of the leading entrepreneur-owned businesses in Israel. It currently has 11 locations of the brewery and restaurants, and it was founded in 2009. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure. Thank you for taking time.
What's interesting about you is, as you mentioned, we were talking before, you actually made Aliyah twice. In 84, you came to Israel and you joined the army.
Correct.
Can you give me a little bit of background of what motivated you to do that?
Sure. Pure Zionism, actually. I grew up late 70s and 80s, and I was so proud, you know, for the first time in 2,000 years. You know, Am Yisrael, the Jewish people are standing on their own two feet, and we're making real progress, and I wanted to be a part of that. And I showed up in 1984 for the first time, spent 3 years in the Army, wanted to be a part of it. And then I went back to the United States in 87 and got a culinary degree, a degree in hotel and restaurant management, and then got hooked on the beer bug and studied at UC Davis in California, advanced brewing sciences, and then in Siebel in Chicago, the oldest brewing schools in Chicago, Siebel Institute of Technology. And got my brewmaster certification there, wrote my business plan, and returned in 1999 with two little kids and started again in the Merkaz Klita and the Absorption Center in Ra'anana, and it's just been an amazing ride ever since.
And can you tell me a little bit about the home you grew up in? Was it a Zionist home in Washington, D.C., is that correct?
Correct. Born in Boston. My father was finishing up at MIT, Harvard Law, and then MIT in city planning. When I was two, the family moved to D.C. My father worked for the government for many years at HUD, Housing and Urban Development. And that actually came in handy as I got older because he taught us how cities develop and how space develops. And that's how I found my first location in Petah Tikva. Modern Orthodox family, went to Hebrew Academy, Jewish day school. I wouldn't say an extremely Zionistic family, but religious and Shabbos and, you know, holidays and kosher, and we did the whole thing. And my senior year in high school, part of the program was we graduated early in February and we came to Israel, and I got my first taste of the Holy Land, and I was so impressed. It was like Wild West and so much potential that I wanted to be a part of it.
When you came in 1984, this is before like the Lone Soldier program. This is before Friends of the IDF. Nobody's cuddling you at the airport. You came in, did you speak fluent Hebrew?
Didn't speak fluent Hebrew. I had the basics, you know, Jewish day school
Hebrew.
Hebrew.
That was the idea.
It was hard. I started the first 4 months in the Army. We did an olpan, and slowly over the years, my Hebrew got better and better. It was hard being a lone soldier here. Back in the day, I was on Kibbutz Shluchot, which is in Beit Shan, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's nowhere.
It's nowhere.
And I think there is a train there. Right?
Yeah, Afula. Afula has a train.
That,
I don't know if
that,
it's...
There was
nothing there. We were really hard to get home. And, you know, but it was nice being on Kibbutz. You have a support system there with laundry and being able to... You don't have to worry about cooking, and that was nice. But it was just hard to get back there. It was really hard times, actually. It was hard times. They don't pay loan. They don't pay soldiers very much. So it was tight. It was a tight time. But you have to start with everybody else and move forward. I think the most interesting thing was that I was surrounded by so many other Olim Chadashim from all over the world with the same ideology, and it was so nice to see whether they're Iranian or French or Argentina or Brazilian or, you know, Australian or American. Or English. It was amazing to be with a group of people with that same sort of ideology that they were so proud to be here. It was exciting.
Just to clarify, you went straight after high school?
Right after high school. I spent 6 months in yeshiva in Jerusalem right before.
Which one?
Beit Midrash, BMT.
Oh, okay, yeah,
BMT
sure.
in Jerusalem. I spent 6 months there.
One of my close mentors, David Aaron, actually taught there.
Yeah, so I got lucky. I ran into a Rav there, and he just shook me up. He every time he would pass me in the hall, he would grab me by the cheek and shake me and say, Shimshon, Shimshon, titorer, titorer, wake up, wake up. And after 6 months, I realized what I wanted to do and what I needed to do. And I was also in a desperate need of a little discipline at that stage in my development. And the Army gave me that time to mature and teach me how to manage time. Time is the greatest gift we have, so... the Army taught me how to manage time, and that really has been an amazing tool for me throughout my life.
So 87, you finished the army. Which unit were you in?
I was in Nahal. I finished in...
For those people who don't know, Nahal is a combat unit.
Yeah, infantry unit. And it's really sweet now because my eldest son, who's 23, is an officer in Nahal now. He's a captain in Nahal, so he's been
in
the army.
Were you in Lebanon at that time?
In 85, yeah, in Sidon. I spent about 4 months in Sidon and then ran the Lebanese border for a few months before I came back to the States to visit my parents. Lone soldiers get a month to visit their parents. So it was nice to be able to see them.
Thank you for doing that.
Oh, pleasure, man. It was an honor for me to serve.
I was born in Russia, so for us, a lot of our pride as Jews came after 67. So that notion of a Zionism being identified with a proud Jew and for Sudanese really relates to me. So 87, now I would think, okay, he just graduated the army, he's in this experience. The obvious next thing is going to go to university in Israel, he's going to fall in love, he's going to open up his little thing, whatever he's going to do, and he's going to continue his life. And instead, you go back to the States.
I went back to the United States because I knew I wanted to study hospitality management. And at the time here in Israel, there was only one program called Tadmol. And they had a two-year sort of culinary program. And the language was a barrier. I didn't want to have to study in Hebrew. And there was no program that really supported what I wanted to do. So I went back to New York to D.C. And then I studied 2 years culinary in Sullivan County Community College in upstate New York in the Borscht Belt near Kutcher's and Concord, all the Jewish hotels, and I actually worked my way through college at these kosher hotels as a busboy and a bellhop and as a waiter on the Chagim. But that was the basis. That was the foundation. You have to be able to feed Am Yisrael. If you don't feed our people, you know, you're in big trouble if you want to be in this industry. So I knew I wanted to be have that under my belt. And then from there, in 89, I tasted my first microbrew beer in Baltimore. I was sitting with my friends in a small brew pub called Sisson's, and I tasted a blueberry ale, and I fell off my chair. I fell off my chair. It was so fresh and so delicious. And I was like, wow, I have to bring this back to Israel. Right. And from there, I moved down to Miami, to FIU, to Florida International University, one of the top hospitality management schools in the country. And at that point, I was rooming with a good friend of mine, Benji Singer. He's the one who brought WeWork back to Israel. Benji Singer's older brother, Saul Singer, wrote Startup Nation. Singer family, been friends since high school in D.C. And me and Benji, one night, we dreamed up this concept, kosher and cool. No one's put kosher and cool together like we have. And it was a completely new genre. And we made a deal that he would come back to Israel to learn how to do business in this jungle. And I would learn everything there is to in the beer industry.
And you made that deal in?
Must have been 1990, 89, 90.
It reminds me of those stories about the rabbi who goes to sleep and says, you know, promise me if I die first, he'll come to me in a dream. So it's like, Benji, if you go to Israel first, promise you'll make money and make a business. Now, just this theme about the importance of education for you, is that what you got from your father? How did you just self-study?
Self-study is, if you're going to ask someone for money, any entrepreneur, anyone who's doing business, and it's interesting, it took me almost 25 years to put this project together from the time exactly 20 years, from, you know, 89 to 2009, it took me 20 years to pull it together. And a lot of people have a lot of great ideas, but I wrote the business plan and I got it all, I had all the skill sets, but, you know, the most important thing with opening any business is funding and money. And thank God I met my partner, Dan Alon, and he had the sophistication to help me raise that money. And, you know, without that partnerships are probably the most delicate.
I mean, I want to talk about Dan in a second, but why the education again?
Education, education, education. I tell this generation it's really important now more than ever because we might live to be 150 years old. With modern medicine, we're going to live to be a long time. And the more educated you become in all sorts of different facets, the more opportunity you have down the road. You have no idea which way life is going to turn. And the culinary arts paid off, the hospitality management paid off, the brewing sciences, the microbiology, the chemistry, the engineering, all that stuff. You know, as I moved through my business world, all these facets of education have come in so handy. And I have 4 children right now, and they're all studying, and I make sure I tell them, get a PhD. I expect a PhD from you guys. You have plenty of time to do everything. And, you know, my father was it was really important to my father. I read all the classics, the Moby Dick, the War and Peace, all that stuff. He just, my father taught me, learn to read and learn to write. Those are the most important things, and then you can continuously learn. If you can't read and write, you can't learn. That's the foundation of any good education. And I think it's really, you know, sad these days that, you know, people are so narrow in their approach to education that they choose something when they're 18, 19 years old, and by the time they're 24, they're already bored. Or they start their job and they don't really, they, you know. I was lucky being 22 as a freshman. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, but I don't understand how Americans can choose what they want to be and how they want to pursue their life when they're, you know, after 18 years of formal education, just high school. Children need, you know, kids need a little time,
yeah,
you know, to expand a little bit, to breathe a little bit, to see what's out there and what's going on with themselves and the universe. And then they can make better educational decisions, better, you know, directional decisions for their lives. You know, being, you know, finding something that you have passion about is so important, because if you don't have passion, it gets boring very quickly, whatever you do. Eventually, everything becomes routine when it comes to work. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to really be, you know, I'm hands-on.
Yeah.
In the factory, dropping off, you know, product, organizing beer on shelves, touching it, touching the people. For me, you know, my business is all about the people. It's always about, you know, that contact, you know, four eyes.
So this Danny.
Dan Alon
seems like a really key person. 39. You come back at that time, you say you're married with two kids at that time?
I'm married with two kids. I met my wife getting out of the army on Kibbutz Regavim. She's from Brazil, from Sao Paulo. She's a high tech. I'm low tech. Actually, right now she's in Orlando at a big convention. She does high tech. She works for a semiconductor chip company, and she's amazing. She never gave up on me, my wife. She never gave up on this dream, which I think a lot of women after 20 years would have been like, "Come on, man, let go of the bone."
When you came in 99, it looks like you didn't have a tremendous amount of resources.
I had nothing. I came with $5,000. I just finished paying for my education at UC Davis, my education in Chicago, my wife's education at GW. She got a master's in science, technology, and public policy. And we came back with nothing and started again. Actually, my first job when I came back.
And you had two kids at that time.
I had two little kids, a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old. $5,000. And I moved into the absorption center. My first job actually coming back was in construction. Worked in construction for about 6 months in B'nai Brak. And before that, while I was in D.C., actually, I worked for a very large catering company called Design Cuisine, probably one of the largest on the East Coast for sure. And they could do up to 50,000. All the rentals at a very famous company called, they had the largest rental company in the United States called D.C. Rental. They went coast to coast. And I worked at the White House for 6 years under Clinton and Bush administrations. I did Clinton's inaugural lunch, Bush's inaugural lunch, high-end stuff at the State Department. Running services, running the events.
Got it. So your logistics.
Yeah,
all of it.
You know,
front of the house and back of the house.
Mostly the front of the house, but I set up the kitchen every day.
We're about to start geeking out on catering for a second, because this is what I did. So I apologize for the next couple of days. We're going to be geeking out. So you did front of the house and back of the house?
Mostly front of the house. I would come in. Everything was off-premise. It was all off-premise, yeah. Whether it was at the Capitol, the State Department, or the Pension Building, or the National Gallery of Art. We would come in with our trucks, and we'd bring in everything, down to the last salt and pepper shaker, every demi spoon, whatever it was. And I would come in every day and set up the kitchen, set up the tables, check all the equipment, check, you know, dealing with the floors, dealing with security, dealing with the party planners, dealing with the client, and then, you know, all the way through, coat check, all the way through, set it all up, get all, you know, get the labor focused and lined up. I grew up in a tuxedo 18 hours a day for 20 years, in a tuxedo every single day. And then run the event, then break it down and put it all back on the truck till 3 o'clock in the morning. You know what it's like, catering.
And then the attention to detail in the industry is just incredible.
Yeah, you have to be. Otherwise, there's no apologies at the White House.
No.
I was sorry we didn't get it right. It never happens. So.
Wow. So basically, why did you know that in 99 it was time to move back to Israel?
I had a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old at the time, and I knew that if I let them get into nursery and school, it was going to be much, much more difficult for them and for me. And we had been in the States a little over 6 or 7 years already, my wife and I. And it was just time to come back. It was time to make the move. And I didn't think it was going to get any easier. So
you arrive. You're in Israel. I mean, this is so powerful. It's 1999. Again, I think 2 years before the Intifada starts. So it's still pretty quiet. And you're about to go right into $5,000, absorption center, two young kids. Your wife spoke the language?
She spoke a bit of Hebrew. She speaks French, Portuguese, Spanish, and English. She's really good with languages. And she got a job straight away, high tech. She worked for ECI Telecom for 15 years, doing their marketing, their internal and external messaging. She worked for their business. They called it business intelligence
at
the time.
So she gets settled in. You guys get, she finds a job. You're going to construction.
Going to construction, do construction for 6 months. And then I'm back to Benji. I helped Benji Singer open up a small restaurant in South Tel Aviv called Limonada. I worked there for 4.5 years, spent my mornings in the kitchen. And my afternoons opening hummus and stuffing pitot and, you know, serving. It was a hummus grill restaurant. And I worked there for about 4.5 years. And then from there, I started working for Art Cafe. Art Cafe is one of the largest, at the time, it was like the top coffee houses in the country. Spent 6 years working for them roasting
just
coffee.
Had a meeting in Tel Aviv in the Art Cafe in the mall right there. That's great.
Exactly. So I was in charge of all their coffee production, roasting coffee. Product service. And then I was also in charge of all their beverage development, any new beverages that went out to their counters. And it was interesting seeing what the Israeli palate is and where their thresholds are, how much sweet, how much sour, how much imagination they have. And what I found out is they have very little imagination, at least back in 2006 or whatever it might have been, or five. And they like mocha, chocolate and raspberry. Those were the things that they yeah, that's what they liked. It was really simple. And it was interesting because after working for them, I always wanted to do a raspberry flavored beer, a wild, you know, berry. And finally I was able to produce that that product for the market, which was great. Really, really nice.
So just a question that comes up here. I myself have 3 young kids. How are you doing all of this with your wife working full time and you're working in the catering or food manufacturing, which is very demanding? And you have no family here.
No family.
So
that was one of the hardest
so
things. Well, I started working at the restaurant at 7:30 in the morning, and I would be home by 3:30. I'd be home for 3:30, 4 o'clock, pick up the kids from Gan, and I would be the afternoon daddy. I still do that even now. I work all day. I get home at 3:30, take care of the kids, pick them up, drop them off, pick them up, drop them off. And then I cook dinner, and then I go back out at 8 o'clock, 8:30, when my wife gets home. My wife gets home usually around 7, between 7 and 8 o'clock, depending on what's going on. After working for Art Cafe, I started going back and forth to the States again and working catering 3 months, 2 months, and then coming back and forth. And when my third son, Gadi, was born, my wife turned to me and she said, "You figure this out. Well, we're going back." So I helped a friend open a restaurant called Bistro 56. It's in Herzliya in Arena. And there I was the pastry chef when that restaurant opened. I worked for them for about 6 months. And then I opened a small catering company in Ranana called At Your Service. And that's when my luck changed. When you start taking care of people, after each event that I did, I would drop my business plan on the desk, on the owner's desk. And after taking care of people, after a few events with somebody, they start to trust you. So I started to get some traction. That's exactly how I met my partner, Dan. I did his son's Brit Milah. It was a great menu, you know, Hawaiian salmon, a whole brie with marmalade on top. And it was just a really fun menu. Hot brie oozing from the sides.
Was it bris you said?
Yeah, it was a bris.
Milk bris.
Yeah.
Very nice. Wow.
And that's where I met my partner, Dan. And we've been going strong ever since with that.
I mean, this is so fascinating. And amazing that your wife, it seemed like it was very important for her to have the family together. If you can continue traveling, we have to move, right? Even though she herself is a big Zionist, she clearly wants to be here.
Yeah, she wanted to be here. And right now it's nice because her parents are in the country. They live with us. It's very exciting.
And you guys live where?
In Ranana. We never left. We now have 4 kids. My oldest is 23. He's an officer in the army. I have a 21-year-old in Netivot in, what's the name of the yeshiva? It's called Ahavat Yisrael, I think.
Okay.
The yeshiva, he's 3 years in Netivot. And he's also studying education. He's 21. And I have a 18-year-old, just turned 18 on Saturday, and a 13-year-old daughter who's just finishing 7th grade now.
And you have 11 other children.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about Jams? What was the original? You used to talk about business plan, I imagine. We talk about like a 10-page, 15-page. What was the business plan in When did you write the business plan, and what was the business plan?
I started writing the business plan, the first one in 96. I wrote the first one in 96, and it was the Galilee Brewing Company. And then a year later, I wrote the Israel Brewing Company. And at first, it had a pizza concept, stone brick, you know, oven pizza concept, and a hamburger concept. The crux of the biscuit was basically, you know, the American brew pub concept, where, you know, a factory with a restaurant combined. I knew because of the duopoly here in Israel of Coca-Cola and Tempo, they basically control.
What is duopoly?
A monopoly. Well, there's usually a monopoly where right. you have one person controlling the market. Here in Israel, you have a duopoly, which is, you know, two companies that basically, you know, have 95% of the market, especially 10 years ago before this whole thing started. So Coca-Cola does Carlsberg and Tuborg, and Tempo does Gold Star, Maccabi, and maybe a Guinness in there or somewhere, somebody else, or Heineken possibly. So they controlled most of the market. And I knew for me to get on the shelves was going to be extremely difficult, and also distribution and logistics here in Israel. Everything needs to be imported. It's very, very complicated logistically. So I knew I needed to sell.
Everything has to be imported.
The bottles are imported. The grains imported. The hops imported. Everything, the caps are imported. Everything has to be imported. There's no local beer, you know, economy here in the Middle East. So I knew if I'm going to produce beer, I needed to maximize profitability. First of all, going from the tank to the glass and controlling the market. Right now, we do about probably 800 people a day in the original facility in Petah Tikva. So I wanted to build an experience. This is an experiential brand, and I wanted people to be able to see the equipment and see the facility and watch us brew, and then be able to get it so fresh in the glass. Actually, Gems is definitely the freshest beer, you know, in the world. Because the country is so small, distribution, you know, here, even right now, we're 15 minutes from the factory. So it leaves the tank, it comes to the factory, it comes to the restaurants, and people get to experience it on a really intimate level.
Was your plan always to have a product and service business? You always knew you're going to have brewing on site with the food components?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to do a brew pub, but I really didn't want to have a restaurant chain in the beginning. Coming from the restaurant industry, it's one of the hardest industries in the world, the restaurant industry. And before opening, I'd already opened up 4 or 5 restaurants in my career, and it wasn't something that I was really excited about. But the market, the model was so perfect. The resto bar, brew pub, you know, even here, you still have the components and the elements when you sit in the restaurant here. You still have the big stainless steel pipes, and it looks the industrial look. So you get that experience with the beer and the food. So it's been a nice combination. And no one else wanted to also dance on this stage. We were thinking after 2 or 3 years, someone else is going to build a brew pub. But no one really took on this style of service. So we've just expanded and kept moving forward.
So you mentioned that the beer. The beer is a tool for something bigger.
For me.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, the beer.
It's called Gems Beer.
Yeah, Beer Factory, Gems Beer Factory. But for me, the beer has always been a catalyst for me to play with Am Yisrael. 5% alcohol is so perfect to bring down the pressure of the day. And this country, it's really small, it's a pressure cooker. And to give people an opportunity to get off their phones and get out of traffic and sit with their friends and be together and do something, you know. That has nothing to do with some visual screen that you have to, you know, interact with. And, you know, one of my heroes growing up was Abraham. And this guy was this service specialist. He's this warrior prince sitting outside his tent after his circumcision looking for someone to serve. And it was inspirational for me growing up that this guy, you know, going out to battle for Lot and, you know, sitting and doing, you know, he was so out there, you know, hearing voices and, you know, really connecting, you know, hey, Abraham, how you doing? Oh, I'm doing good, God, how you doing? Just take the tip of your penis and just give me a little bit. And this guy actually got on it and did it. We're very different than, the Jews are different. You know, we have this, it's a different genetic makeup, and where we come from is so different. And, services, it's just special for me. It's holy. You know, being able to, you know, serve people food and beverage and take care of people, it's holy work.
And what's interesting is you really stress also the entertainment part, because I see you're in every one of the places you open up, there's always musicians coming, there's entertainment. you're kind of a this gathering space for, like you said, I'm trying to bring down the pressure so people can kind of see each other a little bit. Is that why the music is so important, why the performance is so important for you?
It was really a sideshow for us, the music side of the business. On Sunday nights, we only do shows on Sunday nights, which is a really slow night. So we had to bring some energy and give people a reason to come out on Sunday nights. And it's so special. Also, we do it on Fridays in some of our locations too, Kabbalat Shabbat. And it's just nice, you know, beer, music, and friends. It's pretty much heaven.
So tell me a little bit about the model of the business. Is it a franchise? Do you own the people? What is the business model currently?
Okay, currently the model is if we can find a good partner, meaning they have the money or they have the skill sets, one or the other, we'll partner with them. At the moment, we have 11 locations. Number two was Ranana, which is company owned. It's a small neighborhood bar. It's a completely different concept than these bigger restaurants. Really nice, small, intimate, amazing sandwiches. We do these hot panini Italian sandwiches. Number two was Kfalsaba, a little bigger, our first franchise. Then we opened up Ramat HaChayal, our second franchise, which is also a different concept. Ramat HaChayal is in a food court. I call it Hotspot Gems, and do a really strong business lunch, but it's a much smaller sort of takeaway, sit down, have a beer, have some food, and run. Our next franchise was Herzliya and Modin were franchises. And
so, Jeremy, for those people who just need to understand a little bit about how does a franchise make money, and what do you provide to the franchisee?
Okay.
How do you build a successful franchise?
Well, you don't let it out of your control. That's the first thing. There's a book about 200 pages with all the rules and regulations. We build the location for our franchisee. We give them the menu. We train their management team in Petah Tikva. We train their staff also in Petah Tikva. So when they open the doors, they're ready to go. They know what it looks like. They know what it's supposed to feel like. The company makes money because they have to, depending on how big and how much square footage, they pay us per franchise fee up front. And then they also buy our beer. So we make money selling them beer. We also make money up front. And then we basically meet with them once a week, each location. We make sure their food cost numbers are right, their labor cost numbers are right. And we make sure that they are in a position, because if they don't make money, we don't make money.
What was some of the surprising things you didn't expect when you, because there is a certain degree of letting go of some control when you bring in someone who either has the money or the skill sets, but again, it's their business. It's your brand.
It's actually our business. Israelis are interesting because Israelis, I don't think, were born to be franchisees. They don't like taking direction in general. They like to do things their own way. So one of the things that we did to make sure we actually have control of the company or what goes on is we control most of the leases. So if they decide not to do what we want to do, we can close them down and just run it ourselves. So we make sure that they march to our tune.
So
it's very important.
Is the owner of the franchise, is he an employee of Gems?
No, not an employee, but if you control their property, they have to, we control their lease, basically.
Fascinating. So that allows you essentially more control and responsibility over whatever is transpiring. Because again, in the end, it's your brand.
Right, exactly. And I'm out every night, three, four nights a week, I'm everywhere. You know, I go to all the branches during the day. Once a week, I hit every one of the branches during the day. And I probably hit, probably 10, 9 or 10 out of the 11 at nighttime as well.
Amazing.
Get a driver and keep showing up.
I could literally go out for hours with you because this is so fascinating. Both because it's so much parallels my interest in food and catering from background. And also clearly it's very, you have this interesting external, looks like a surfer guy from California. But you start opening this up and you see there's such a deepness, understanding of business and process. And when you say we smack them with 200 page guidebook, it's you're essentially creating an experience that you want them to follow. It's that order. It's a tuxedo. But right now you're looking just very free, but inside a lot of control. So two questions came up with me. So you meant the army seemed to be a major factor in the Startup Nation success. You said to me that it's the greatest gift that the army gave it was the value of time. Can you explain a little bit about, again, a little bit more of how you understand that and what gift exactly they gave you, and how we as Olim, who a lot of us do not have not served in the army, how can we still be part of that culture? How can we participate? How can we understand at least the mentality a little better? So again, my question is the role of the army in building entrepreneurs, and two is how can we as Olim, who have not served in the army, connect to that?
They're really completely two separate questions. The army, in the most part, with like you were saying, with the startup nation, that build the high tech and technology end of it. Here in Israel, I think for new Olim, the most important thing is to, they have to slow down. They have to realize that things don't move. We're in the Middle East, things don't move at the same pace that you want them to. Personally, for me, I need to squeeze every minute out of every single day. So managing my time is really, really crucial. Olim Chadashim need to understand that it takes time to reestablish yourself. Coming in your early 30s, mid-30s, it's a completely different, you know, set of rules here, the language skills, and you really need to slow down, be thankful and grateful that you got here first, and don't think, and I'm not sure that Israel needs to change for you. You need to help change Israel. We need to bring that American mentality and slowly work it into the Israeli system, how to do things right, not cut corners. Israelis always like to say, yeah, beseder, it's going to be okay. But, you know, finishing jobs properly and taking care of, you know, that type of management. No one moves country to country. It's a real phenomena, you know, willingly. You know, so many people do it because of economic stress or war-torn areas. But for us, it's such an ideological thing. We, first of all, we have to say thank you. After 2,000 years that we've been crying, next year in Jerusalem, next year in Jerusalem, next year in Jerusalem, to finally be here and be able to, and it's not 1948. This is a high-tech powerhouse now. We have the best culinary. We have the best beaches. It's so exciting to be here. And I feel so sorry and sad for our brethren who aren't coming, whether they're in England or in France or in America, especially America. They get too comfortable. You know, sometimes I say that even rats are smarter than Jews. They know when to get off a sinking ship. But we never want to leave. You know, we feel so comfortable in whatever it might be that, but we're so blessed at this time in history, you know, to be here.
Man, when you came here, no money.
No money.
Young kids, and you just had, and you still were able to have that patience. How do you build patience? How do you slow down? Besides come to GEMS. Obviously you should just go to GEMS, you know, to slow down. But how do you learn to slow down when, like, you feel like you're so behind?
Yeah, it's true. I felt that way when I started as a freshman at 22. But I think the most important thing for Olim Chadashim, they want to hit the road running when they land in Israel. But my best advice for Olim Chadashim is take 2 years. Don't do anything. Do not try to open a business. Spend your time learning Hebrew. Go to Ulpan. Get the language skills under control. Because at a certain age, it's really hard to get the language skills under, you know, to a level where you're going to really need them. But people want to come and they want to do something. But this country will chew you up and spit you out if you move too quickly. And you really need to, you know, understand the environment and how things work here before opening or doing anything. So slow down, catch your breath, take care of the wife and kids, make sure everyone's copacetic and everyone's, you know, settled. Because if the kids aren't happy, it's very, very difficult. And if your kids aren't happy, wives are miserable. So take care of the kids, get them situated. And it's amazing, the children pick it up so quickly. So quickly, they learn the language, and they really integrate really, really quickly. So, but we're not here for ourselves. We're really here. We have to remember, when we switch to a new country, we're not here for ourselves. We're here just for our children. We have to remember, we have to take a step back. We have to really now sit in the back seat and understand that it's going to be very, very difficult, but it's worth it. We're not here for ourselves. We're here for that next generation.
Last question. Your father, is he proud of you?
Yeah, I think my father was really proud of me. He passed away about 4 years ago. Yeah, I think he was. I think he was proud of me. I think my father was an amazing man with a lot of discipline. And he was called the Minyan Man in Washington. He always had mincha in his office every day for 35 years in his office at HUD. And my father never missed a day of putting on his tefillin. Never, ever missed a day. And he was funny because he wasn't really a religious guy or spiritual guy, but he always told me he's just covering his bets, man. He's like, he's covering his bets, he's gonna do, and he never missed a day. It doesn't matter if we were in a train station in Germany or an airport somewhere or on the side of the road on I-95 going down to Florida, he never missed a day. And that, and also my father almost, I don't think I ever saw him get mad, my father. So it was really amazing, you know, that to have that type of inner discipline.
What final words would you like to share with?
I'd like to share something about my mother. My mother made Aliyah 10 years ago from Seattle, Washington to Mitzpe Ramon.
Wow, and
Yeah.
She made. That's no joke. Seattle, like, I guess she was just bored and tired of the rain.
She's here now, and that's really special having her around and her being in the country. Because I have one of my two younger brothers, one in Baltimore, one in Atlanta, and I have a sister in Jackson, Mississippi. So it's nice. I also have a stepsister, a half sister in Beit Shemesh. So it's nice. Wow. To have a little bit of family. I have a lot of cousins here. Just be patient. Just tell everyone, be patient, and no matter how much money you think you have, it's never going to be enough. But it's more of a mental issue than anything else. We have to drop our expectations down. Everyone thinks, you know, I have 11 restaurants and I have a big factory and everything. Still, monthly, you know, finishing month is hard. I've been renting for 20 years in Ra'anana, haven't bought a place. But it's more of a mental switch. We have to make a mental switch and, you know, just know that being first you have to be in the right location. And we don't need as much as we think we do to be happy and to, you know, to make our lives, you know, special.
Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for your wisdom. I'm really touched by your sincerity, and I feel a lot of gratitude from you. So thank you so much for teaching.
I want to say one more thing about partners. Partners, you know, in business is the most important thing. Whether also partnership in marriage is the most important thing and the hardest thing we do. And that harmony is crucial. You know, no one's perfect. Hopefully, you find partners that complement your skills. Your skill sets, and I have two amazing partners, one that runs the restaurant end, one that runs the back office and money end, and I get to do product and service every day. And that combination, not having to do the business end for me, gives me wings to be able to, you know, really be happy and, you know, touch every customer.
What is the book that you give most, or a piece of wisdom that people could follow up on these ideas you're sharing that people can read on their own? I know how much you value education.
There's so many amazing books out there. I'm not sure what I would recommend. Most of the stuff I'm reading now is Torah time. I do a lot of Torah time. I do a lot of religious studies here. There's so many amazing videos that you can watch. And, you know, I think more people are watching, you know, TED Talks and, you know, if they want, you know, specific information. I don't even know. I don't know which book I would choose, actually. Probably something Rav Cook. It would definitely be a Rav Cook book.
Awesome. All right, Jeremy. Thank you so much for today.
Take care. Have a look. So nice to meet you.